I think our first meeting lasted about an hour, and we solidify on plans. We combine different approaches from our group and the Merck team, and we set plans in motion. Overall, I think the first meeting was very empowering, at least for our Illinois side. We knew that we have, you know, a much higher chances completing this project, not just faster, but also much better if we join forces with Merck.
Hi, I'm LC, and I'm a storyteller. I'm a passionate chemist who loves to explore and tell stories about how chemistry can change the world.
And I'm Danny, and I'm LC's spirited chemistry co-host. I love to bring high energy and positivity to my chemistry, but also my life. Welcome to the Farm to Table podcast.
We're two chemists working at the pharmaceutical company Merck in the U.S.,
also known as MSD, everywhere else in the world except Canada, the U.S., and its territories.
And this is a podcast where we'll tell you stories about the people and the science behind the papers published by our chemistry group.
Each week, we'll pick one to two papers that we recently published and introduce you to the key people behind it, and also ask them to give you a unique insight into the story behind it. Hey folks, welcome to the Farm to Table podcast. Today we have a very exciting episode where we're going to be diving into the total synthesis of Darrobactin, which was done in collaboration with Merck Process Chemistry and also with the Sarla Lab at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana. Now, a lot of you might be wondering, why on earth is Merck doing a total synthesis?
Yeah. And actually, it's probably worth noting that this isn't the first time that Merck's done this, right? We've had investments in total synthesis in the past. You know, if I think of, you know, all the way back to the 40s when there was the first, you know, total synthesis of biotin that was in science, and then cortisone and chinamycin and FK506, and most recently some himbicine work as well as some platensamycin. But, you know, I think fundamentally a lot of these projects come from the fact that we want to invest in capabilities or in novel methodology the same way that we would in any other reaction that we talk about on the pod. But there are things that you learn when you do total synthesis that are hard to learn when you don't have a target-oriented approach. And so peptide drugs are really important. They've been really important for, you know, 40 years or more, and there continues to be a growth in peptide drugs and a lot of publications on peptidic drugs as well. But I would say recent developments, Danny, in sort of hit-finding methodologies have sort of brought us into a new age here in peptide drug discovery, right?
100%. And that's what's, I think, fueling the curve becoming pretty steep for emerging peptide drugs. So you have mRNA display, phage display, DNA encoded libraries, which are capable of generating billions of unique macrocyclic peptides in a single round. And so the thought of, are you going to find a hit, is a guaranteed yes. And the question becomes, can you develop it into a drug? And so given this steep trajectory and, you know, the anticipation of more peptide candidates, we really wanted to invest in the ability to, you know, improve the routes and ways in which we think about making macrocyclic peptides. And so in late 2020, we kicked off the Macrocyclic Peptide Initiative. And this was a discovery process chemistry-centric initiative. It was led by Jamie McCabe-Dunn. And we had a bunch of different sub-teams. And one that we thought, you know, we really wanted to pursue was macrocyclizations and also crosslinks. And the reason for this is that the current toolbox to do, you know, a macrocyclization or a crosslink was pretty limited at the time. You know, a lot of tried and true approaches are doing azide, click type chemistry, ring closing, metathesis. And so we really wondered, are there more, you know, ways in which you can think about constructing macrocyclic peptides? And so, as you alluded to before, Darrobactin appeared in the literature, what was it, late 2019?
Yep, late 2019 in Nature paper.
So as a result, we thought that Darrobactin was going to be the perfect target for us to really focus our macrocyclization and cross-linking efforts towards. And, you know, throughout what you're going to hear today, The pursuit of the total synthesis of Darrobactin not only gave us new chemistry for four-gene crosslinks, but it also opened our eyes to new routes of making non-canonical amino acids. And I think another interesting aspect was how do we go about characterizing a lot of these macrocyclic peptides as well? Because as you're going to hear, Darrobactin has a lot of unique atrope isomers. Some even think it has ansomers. Ansomers just came out in 2022, I believe. It's a very new isomer. And so I think it really, put our analytical team to the test as well about, you know, how we go about characterizing these.
Yeah, I'm really excited for today. So we'll switch gears here and go talk to our guests. All right, welcome to the Farm to Table podcast. This week's episode, we're here with Nikki and Dave to talk about their 2022 JAX paper, The Total Synthesis of Darrobactin A, which was in collaboration with Professor Sarla's group at UIUC. Nikki and Dave, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having us.
So first, we like to kick things off with a little bit of introductions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit better. So Nikki, you first, who you are and what you do at Merck, and maybe a fun fact.
Sure. Thanks for having us. My name is Nikki Patel. I'm a process chemist here at Merck. I grew up in Philadelphia. Go Birds. For undergraduate, I went to Temple University and then went to Lehigh for grad school and then returned to Philly for a postdoc at the University of Pennsylvania. So I've been at Merck for about 6 years now. Spent my first 3 years at the Rahway site in process chemistry, and then moved a few miles away to the Kenilworth, New Jersey site, switching over to the Discovery Process Chemistry Group. And now I've returned back to process chemistry to work on some commercial route development. Fun fact about myself, I love the audio media. I love audiobooks, the podcasting as well. And in particular, I also love music. So I have an ever growing vinyl collection. So something I'm very proud of. It's one of my prized possessions.
Oh, vinyl collection. Do yeah. you like go to garage sales and like try to find those gems of like people that are like trying to sell their vinyl records?
Yeah, there's a great record store really close by where I live in Milltown, New Jersey. They have just a crazy collection that is always turning over. And so I follow them on Instagram, see what they get. And they have some really cool collector items as well.
That's neat. That's neat. Yeah. All right, Dave, your turn now. Who are you? You know, what do you do at Merck? And tell us a little bit more about yourself.
So yeah, good to be here. My name is Dave Petroni. I'm an organic chemist and I work in the Kenilworth DPC group. I did my undergrad at the University of Guelph in Ontario, Canada, and did graduate studies with Mark Lawton's at the University of Toronto before a postdoc with Eric Carrera at the ETH in Zurich. I've been in the Kenilworth DPC group for 2 years now. It's been great. And a fun fact is, when I came to New Jersey, I moved here with my wife, Michelle, and we have a cockapoo named Rosie.
Aw, fun fact. That is a good fact. Now, Dave, you mentioned you've been here for 2 years, and so you're relatively new at Merck, and a lot of our audience is actually graduate students, undergrads, I don't know, maybe not, postdocs. But I guess, can you give a sense of, like, what was one big thing that you had to adapt to when you were working in an industrial environment?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. It's something I wondered, you know, before starting as well, like, what would be different? And I think just the biggest difference, and it's not something too important, but it's generally like when you're in an academic chemistry department, it's pretty easy to find answers to your questions and obtain project support for whatever issue you have. But when you're researching in industrial environments, it can be a little bit different in a sense that, you know, the colleague or person you could be looking for could be in a completely different organization or even in a different geographic site. So it takes a little bit more of detective work to develop solutions to these problems. But that all being said, at the end of that search, you're going to find someone who's an expert and devoted a significant portion of their career to the problem that you are trying to solve. And generally at Merck, you're always going to be in good hands.
I totally agree with that, Dave. I mean, one of my first managers when I moved to Rahway used to say the expert's always down the hall, right? There's always someone who... you know, through either their own experience or through their graduate training, they're sort of uniquely suited to consult with. And That's just a tremendous resource that we're lucky to tap in every day.
Thanks, Dave and Nikki, for introducing yourselves. And without further ado, let's get into some chemistry. Now, Nikki, when the team sat down to work on Darrowbacton, it was late 2019, early 2020, and you were looking at this really complex macrocyclic peptide. Where did the team land on the overall synthetic strategy?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Darrowbacton is a pretty complex molecule. And when you look at it, you know, while it's only composed of seven amino acids, it has these two fused macrocyclic peptide rings with crosslinks within the molecule. So it's really complex as well. When we first got together, we drew out a bunch of retrosynthetic routes. But because we were a fairly small team, just a few of us are working on the project, we really needed to prioritize our time and prioritize which routes we wanted to pursue. So ultimately, what we decided to do was to focus on the routes that we at that time believed would lead to the highest probability of success. So we thought we'd take advantage of the ease of making a peptide bond, meaning we'd stitch together the molecule linearly and then try to cyclize Darrowbacton using macrolactamizations. And so what we ended up doing involved developing chemistry first to access the key non-canonical amino acids that were needed to form the crosslinks. In particular, two of the really challenging building blocks were a beta hydroxytryptophan, as well as this really interesting beta branch lysine fragment. And then once we had access to those, we focused our efforts on cross-coupling the various pieces of the backbone together. And then lastly, applying that towards a larger study on macrolactamization to bring the whole molecule together. And then, of course, because we're process chemists, we really wanted all these routes and the chemistry that we developed to be robust, scalable, and highly enantioselective.
Now, Dave, as Nikki just pointed out, one of the key amino acids that was required was this beta branch lysine. And so I guess, how did you devise a route to come up with this really key amino acid that was ultimately scalable? Because it had to fund the frontier of the total synthesis eventually.
Yeah, definitely. We were looking for scalable routes, as Nikki mentioned, generally speaking, and we wanted to access this aryl lysine motif, both in monoamino acid fragments and later on at a later stage in more complex linear peptide fragments. And initially, the team was really interested in leveraging some of the PhotoCat expertise we have in the group. And we were really keen on a radical 1,4 conjugate addition of an alkyl radical to a Michael type acceptor, or a Giza type acceptor. Ultimately, these conditions weren't amenable to the more complex peptide fragments that we were working with, and we were not able to get high levels of stereoselectivity. And I think that when we look back on all of our studies, at some point in our classes, we hear that the way that they form stereocenters in industry is with hydrogenation, you know, generally. So the team started considering whether or not we can use our other expertise, which is in high pressure hydrogenation, as a way to solve this problem. And this led to a long, fruitful collaboration with our colleague Mike Shevlin in the catalysis group. And through working with Mike, we were able to develop a robust route to the tetrasubstituted alkenes, which were required in high pressure hydrogenation, and then ultimately in rhodium catalyzed asymmetric hydroge to get to these aryl-related lysine derivatives.
I feel like this is a lesson that we keep relearning, right? I mean, we were talking with Shane Kriska for another episode, and he was highlighting sort of, you know, beginning of the 2000s and dedicating a lot of effort towards asymmetric hydrogenation. And I feel like it ebbs and flows. You know, we do a lot of asymmetric hydrogenation, and then we don't. And then we have a problem like this that shows up, and it's just like, you know, a bedrock of how we can set these stereocenters. And I think Mike Shevlin in particular is probably the chemist on the planet who's run probably the most asymmetric hydrogenations at this point. And tremendous.
It's probably a million.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So
at least.
At some point, we should do a back of the envelope math and actually calculate that. But, you know, when I saw this chemistry come together, it was sort of like Old Faithful, you know, it's gonna work for us. So that was really nice to see. So now we have this sort of key amino acid in hand, and you guys are sort of ready to actually start pursuing these macro lactamizations of, you know, both sort of Eastern or Western fragments. Can you walk us through a little bit sort of your explorations, Dave, of this, and ultimately what were your observations?
Yeah, so the team had broken this molecule into the two macrocycles, both the Western macrocycle, which encompassed the aryl ether, and the Eastern macrocycle, which had the aryl lysine building block. And so the team had made all the different permutations of linear peptides, which would allow you to test all the disconnections along the backbones by using macrolactamization. And ultimately, the only products that we were observing and isolating in these cases were the cyclic dimer. We were never getting any of the 14 and 15 membered macrocycles in this case, which was a little bit frustrating, but makes sense given sort of the restrictedness of those ring sizes.
I would say, though, that when you all were starting to get ready to do these macro lactams, that the analytical aspects were quite challenging because a dimer can resemble the molecular weight of the desired macrocycle.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, in the NMR, they're C2 symmetric, so you're not really able to determine whether or not you have that. So in our colleagues in both the NMR and high-res departments, Pablo, as well as Lee Kang, they were able to help us decipher when we had dimer, which was in every case, essentially.
Sadly.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this goes back to how important it is to have those strong partnerships with subject matter experts in analytical chemistry, right? Because I think that was really, you know, empowering for us, and as we're going to find out soon, really empowering in our collaboration. So, I mean, at this point, it's sort of late spring, early summer 2021, Danny, and, you know, this work is in your group, and so you're sort of trying to prioritize the projects and really start thinking about whether we can continue to prioritize this work. So can you walk me through sort of ultimately maybe bring our listeners in into how we ultimately decided to work with Professor Charlotte's group on this?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you called out, it was like summer 2021 and, you know, there were other pipeline efforts that had to, that needed our attention. And so we made the tough call to start to deprioritize the total synthesis. And I think it was like taken hard by the team. You know, we felt like we weren't done yet. We still had, we still wanted to complete the molecule. And so I remember, Elsie, you and I were texting back and forth, and we had become familiar that Sarla was involved in this work. And I think, I knew him. And so it was an opportunity for us to kind of leverage that academic industrial partnership to see if we could get this molecule done. And I sent Dave a text or an email, I don't remember, and just said, hey, do you want to join forces to get this done? He said, absolutely. And the rest is history.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just goes to show that you know, the power of our networks in sort of pursuing these types of things can be really important, right? I mean, I sort of happened to know that Dave was working on this through an interaction with one of our consultants, right? And it was like, well, maybe we could continue this work in
maybe
some way.
Maybe you can just text him, send him some emojis that, you know, give him the right vibe or something.
Yeah. So, Nikki, I mean, so, you know, we're going to do this now. We're going to work with Professor Sarla's group. So can you... You know, how did that first meeting with them go, and how did that whole thing come together to ultimately complete the molecule?
Yeah, our first meeting went really well. Dave and I had previously met Professor Sarla and had gotten the opportunity to start getting to know him. But at this meeting, we were introduced to his three incredible students, Marco, David, and Jonathan, for the first time. And I think to me, something that became quickly apparent was that both the Merck and the Illinois teams were just so passionate about this project and about making this molecule. And that's something that, Danny, you just mentioned. You know, we had such a passion for what we were doing at this point. You know, we'd been individually working on this for over a year, and it was really evident to me that both of the teams were excited to join forces and put our minds together and try to figure out how to make this molecule. So I think what I was most surprised to see at our meeting was how similar our individual approaches were at that point. So we quickly found out that we were both using macrolactamization approaches to try to put this molecule together. And Dave mentioned that we were seeing a lot of dimerization. We weren't really seeing the desired strained macrocycle formation. They were seeing the exact same things, seeing dimerization all the way. So they were seeing the same challenges as we were. And so we quickly realized that the macrolactamization was unfortunately not a path forward. And we collectively decided that we needed to rethink the synthetic approach to putting this molecule together. And so we went back to all of the alternative retrosyntheses that we had originally drawn out. And you know, not only did we want to rethink the route, but as we mentioned, we had spent a long time working on this project at this point. So we wanted to also think about ways of incorporating the cool chemistry that we had already developed into this new route as well. So instead of trying to cyclize this molecule through, you know, peptide bonds, through a macrolactamization, we decided to kind of flip our approach and take advantage of the two tryptophans that are present in each of the ring systems and try to leverage a LaRock indole synthesis to put this molecule together.
Yeah, so we also reached out to Professor Sarla, to Dave, to kind of give us his sense of, you know, how this came to be and sort of how that went. So we'll play you the clip right here.
Our first meeting was quite informative as we exchanged our progress reports. Since at that point, both our Illinois and Merck team have been working on this total synthesis for a year or so. I think we all quickly realize what are the strengths and how we can complement each other going forward. And for both sides, it was also great to see we had similar evolution of our strategies. Even some of the, you know, I would say challenges that we encounter were very much along the same pathways, which was actually ultimately providing us a huge boost and a lot of confidence in starting this collaboration. I think our first meeting lasted about an hour, and we solidified on plans. We combined different approaches from our group and the Merck's team, and we set plans in motion. Overall, I think the first meeting was very empowering, at least for our Illinois side. We knew that we have, you know, a much higher chances completing this project, not just faster, but also much better if we join forces with Merck.
Now, Dave, not Dave Sarla, now Dave Petroni, as Nikki just mentioned, the team decided to go down the road of pursuing a LaRock, but you know, was this a risky call or not? Like, what gave the team confidence that, you know, this was going to be the way to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have to take a step back every time you're in a synthesis and really have some scrutiny against the route, because ultimately you're going to have to go through and make the linear precursor or whatever precursor you're going to use. So you want to at least have some confidence that it's going to be successful. I think that when we were looking at the failed macro lactamizations, those results were telling us that the strain energy in this system was just too high to form that lactam bond. So to follow this trail, we began to build substrates with tethers that did actually macrocyclize. So we were able to extend the tether length by a couple of atoms, cyclize. However, although we can get the macro cycles in hand, we were never able to convert these like so-called placeholder macrocycles to the desired macrolactams. But when you begin to look at the more modern peptide macrocyclization literature, and there's a really good review from Andre Uden and Chris White in Nature Chemistry, you begin to read a lot about different avenues. And somewhere that these reviews sort of lead you is the use of transition metals to access difficult macrocycles. And when you think about a late transition metal, they have fairly large atomic radii. And in these instances, they can serve as sort of an atomic bridge between the termini of a reluctant to cyclize linear peptide. Right. And so we look at the structure of Darabactin. We're pretty familiar with that. There's two indoles buried right in the core of it. And one reaction that sort of stands out to you when you look at that is a palladium catalyzed LaRock indole synthesis. This would allow you to form those two key heterocycles, and then also able to for us to leverage the hypothesis that a transition metal could be this sort of key strain relieving element. And so we thought that this was an interesting avenue to take, and there's been some nice applications of this reaction in the literature, especially by the group of Dale Boger in the streptide synthesis. And there's other great examples of this just in macrocycle formation outside of natural product synthesis. And so we'd figure that this would at least be worth a try. And all the credit goes to Dave's group in this case, who developed the synthesis to the precursors to this and began testing and getting the positive results in the first place. So we were happy to cheerlead them in this case.
So David, there are two indoles, and you could imagine, you know, forming them one at a time. And if you do that, there's an order in which you could do them left to right, right to left, or you could also try to do it all in one shot. And I get the impression, you know, in the paper, you guys kind of walk through the order that we did it, but presumably there's a reason for that. So can you walk us a little bit through some of our observations there and why it was important to build the molecule sort of from right to the left in the way that we did?
Yeah, and again, sort of parroting the results from Dave Sarlaw's group, they tried all permutations of this reaction, and one of the key components of the Darrow structure is that it has an atrope isomeric problem. And so you want both of those indole nitrogens to sort of point up relative to sort of the schemes that you'll see in the paper. And when you go from west to east, you're going to notice the wrong atrope isomer forming in the east. And when you try to do them both at the same time, you begin to get atrope isomer problems as well. So after a lot of different studies, they found out that going and first of all locking down the eastern macrocycle was able to give high levels of diesteric control. Well, actually, I think it was 2-to-1 diesteric selectivity for the desired atrope isomer, and then building in the western macrocycle on top of that already formed ring gave highly selective levels of DR for the second macrocycle.
So, Nikki, you know, you complete these macrocyclizations, you now have basically a fully protected Darrobacton. So this is the worst place to be in a total synthesis, right? One step away from the end, you just got to deprotect everything and everything's going to be fine. So tell me a little bit about how you guys ultimately choreographed the final protecting group removal strategy and also the isolation, which is tricky for this molecule, right?
Right. I mean, forming the cycles was a big feat, but like you said, there is also a huge barrier to doing those deep protections, trying to remove all nine of these, hopefully at one time. It was definitely a big job that was taken on by Marco, David, and Jonathan. They had screened a ton of conditions in the beginning, largely palladium mediated conditions, but these were giving a variety of products, you know, a mixture of partially deprotected intermediates. Ultimately, they were able to identify this really powerful Lewis acid diamine system to do a global deprotection, removing all nine protecting groups in one pot. I remember the day that they had emailed us the MS data saying, showing us the mass of Darrobacton. I opened the email and I screamed to Dave across from our lab, like, I think they made it. So it was a really exciting time. But we needed to confirm whether it was indeed Darrobacton. So they sent us that crude sample, and now Dave and I were tasked with somehow getting pure Darrobacton out of that mixture. You know, luckily, as we mentioned earlier, we have a wealth of subject matter experts on our teams here at Merck. So we were able to talk to a lot of folks, learn from them, and get an idea of how we'd be able to purify this mixture. So we were able to use that knowledge and run a series of experiments using different approaches, ultimately identifying a combination of ion exchange and prep HPLC to isolate the first few milligrams of powder. And then we were able to work with our analytical colleagues, Pablo and Li Kang, to do a full NMR and mass spec analysis of this purified powder, which gave us confidence that we did indeed make pure synthetic Darrobacton. And then while this was going on, Marco, David, and Jonathan were working in the background to refine the deprotection conditions to improve the yield. And then Dave and I were also able to refine the isolation conditions as well. And then we were able to remove the ion exchange and ultimately use prep HPLC as a way of purifying Darrobacton to get our hands on several more milligrams of that material.
Yeah, it was a really beautiful, I guess, collaboration at the end and like a sequence of trade-offs to ultimately get this done. And I must say, like, one, the ultimate protecting group removal was quite impressive. I just did the math. I mean, if you do nine protecting group removals, that's like nine reactions. That's 90% yield, like, that is needed in order to get a 51% overall. So that's pretty cool that they were able to do that. And then the purification that we did in-house was some exciting, intense times. And it was nice to see that once we had it in the vial, we were ready to start to write the paper. And the paper came out in JAX last summer. It was actually published back-to-back with Phil Barron's Total Synthesis as well. And it was really nice to see that great minds think alike. We both relied upon a Laroque indole to forge those BIS macro cycles. But what I thought was really interesting is that we leveraged different building blocks, which I think just owes to the fact that having different routes highlights the complementarity of these two total syntheses.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of a testament to how challenging this macrocyclization is, because we know that all the peptide bond formations give dimers, so there's really something to this sort of transition.
Everyone tried the lactams. Yeah. They don't work.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
Well, famous last words maybe, but so far anyway.
Okay, fine.
So Dave, Nikki, you know, looking back on this now, what do you think made this effort and this joint effort with the Professor Sarlis group so successful? So maybe, Nikki, I'll have you kick us off, and then Dave, you can add your comments.
Sure. I think it was definitely the teamwork and the passion for the jobs. I think, you know, as we mentioned before, both teams were super passionate about the project that we were involved in, and we were really open-minded and excited to get together and put our minds together in trying to get this job done. During that process, it was a really amazing collaboration. We were all open to getting feedback, hearing each other's suggestions, and learning from each other. And over this, you know, 2+ year process, I've gotten to learn so much from my team members, both at Merck as well as from the Illinois team. And it has been the most remarkable collaboration that I've been involved in my time at Merck.
Yeah, and for me, the main key was just the teamwork and coming together to solve this complex problem. And I think the people that we interacted with on this program were generally excited to help contribute to this project. And whenever we talked to them about their results and work, it just showed in how they presented. They were really passionate about getting to a solution and trying to move the team forward as much as they possibly could. And it was just a good atmosphere working and trying to tackle this sort of unknown problem.
Our listeners need to appreciate that it took how many Daves to get the total synthesis of Darrowbactin done? Took 3. 3 Daves.
And maybe people have Dave as a middle name too.
So ooh. But then we could think of maybe naming it Davobactin. No, I'm kidding.
That's so great. We also asked Dave Sarla, you know, if sort of reflecting on the collaboration, what he had to sort of contribute to that as well in terms of, you know, what made it so successful. So we'll play you the clip right here.
The main reason this project was a huge success was because of primarily amazing teamwork, enthusiasm, but also because of strong investment from all members that were involved. During several months, we met once a week, sometimes even more, for updates and brainstorming. And each time these meetings were very invigorating. I should also stress how these meetings were very supportive because, you know, not every week we would have, you know, amazing results to share. We were all facing quite some failure, and having that type of overall supportive environment turned out to be really motivational for all of us. This collaboration was also quite unique in terms of two-way exchange, because we were not just exchanging ideas. We exchanged intermediates on a regular basis. We assisted each other with synthesis, sometimes with purifications and characterizations, right? And we were continuously sending compounds back and forth. We were 100% on board, right? And I think we were all working for the same goals. And ultimately, this was the true team effort in the best possible way.
All right. So, Dave, Nikki, thanks a lot for telling us about this wonderful project. This was, it's been kind of a journey. I remember when this structure first came out in 2019 and sort of texting Jamie like, hey, we should make this, you know. And here we are now with this work behind us. It was really great to talk to you today and to learn more about it.
Thanks for having us on. It's been great chatting with you.
Yeah, thanks so much for the invite. It was a lot of fun.
Up next is Dinobactin, right? I'm kidding again. We're like, never again. We're good. Okay. Cheers, folks.
Thanks for listening to the Farm to Table podcast. This would not have been possible without our fabulous producer, Mark Partridge, and listeners like you. Be sure to check our episode credits, where you'll find more details about the show, as well as links to anything that we've discussed during the show.
If you find yourself craving even more info, you can find us both on Twitter. I am at Danny the Chemist, and LC can be found at Dr. LC Squared. But of course, our show also has a handle, and that is at Farm to Table Pod. Farm with a PH, in case you were wondering, where you'll find some behind the scenes action, future episodes and sneak peeks, and likely some random posts about chemistry, snacks, and whatever else.
Of course, we'd love to hear from you, so please interact with us on Twitter. Feel free to post any chemistry papers, Merck chemistry papers, that that you found particularly memorable and that maybe you want us to build an episode around.
So stay tuned, folks.